Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From TheBlogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio, fawning over and skewering all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network.
This is Jersica.
And I'm Chris. And it's been a while since we've been on your internet waves, internet waves?
At least intentionally.
Right. Colin and Bridget have been holding down the fort while we've been continuing to raise our child in various capacities, including taking him for a vacation down to Madison.
Woo!
That's the tropical locale of Madison, Wisconsin. That's what we call a vacation nowadays. For the 4th of July week, and it was good times had by all. Apologize for not having a new episode. Hopefully you caught up with some of the recap mid-year review posts that we suggested for you. Also, definitely want to point out, if you haven't already seen it, TheBlogulator.com has a special post up this week featuring a leaked script for the season 5 premiere of AMC's Breaking Bad.
WikiLeaks, look out.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's a fun post from our hilarious contributor, Sean. And it's also in advance, of course, of the actual season 5 premiere of Breaking Bad this upcoming Sunday night, which you can look forward to a brand new episode of Blogulator Radio right after that premiere airs, featuring conversation with Bridget Qualler and myself.
Wow. How did our listeners get so lucky?
She is a whippersnapper today, folks. Better watch out. Jerkska does not partake in the Breaking Bad.
I do not.
Because you're scared of drugs.
Mostly, yes.
And yet you watched 4 out of 5 seasons of The Wire.
Yeah, but The Wire's not really about drugs. All right, listen, we're not going to go.
That's a wormhole if there was one. Okay, I think I meant rabbit hole. Worm of cans? Can of worms.
Worm of cans.
English.
Parenting makes you crazy.
Yes, okay. We're here to talk to you about a smattering of topics, because that's kind of what parenting has been like. You kind of watch randomly whatever you can. Not been a lot of chance for focusing on any one thing.
Luckily, there are a lot of terrible shows out there that don't require your focus or full attention.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about a few.
So we're going to start with some new stuff that is currently airing, and then also delve into the wonderfulness that has been HBO Go, which we've recently acquired, to watch some older seasons and actually finish some shows that we never had a chance to finish.
Yes,
because we missed them while they actually aired live on television.
Well, missed.
Missed. In
we didn't see them.
Right.
We weren't able to see them.
We'll
I don't know if we missed them. Right.
Later. That was my Woody Allen Qualler voice.
Yeah,
he's much better at it. let's start with the new stuff. People that actually should be watching right now, and probably the thing that we're most excited about that is genuinely good is the new season of Louie on FX.
Yes.
A lot of people have already mentioned this, but since there's been 2 episodes now, the first episode was, you know, pretty good, but it wasn't, you know, ball-bustingly hilarious like Louie can be, nor was it particularly ball-bustingly insightful.
It was a good showcase for the Louie facial expression.
True.
Which is just like, oh God, I'm in a pickle, and how did I get here?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Right, which is pretty classic. And I think just, especially with season 2 from last summer, a lot of people got very excited about the fact that you never really knew what you were getting with any particular episode of Louie. But Louis C.K., for some reason or other, decided to just keep very simple, you know, this one story for the season premiere of this woman that he wants to break up with but doesn't really know how. And it was actually played by Gabby Hoffman, who I just knew as the girl from Sleepless in Seattle.
Right. And you just said, I didn't know it was Gabby Hoffman, but you said the girl from Sleepless in Seattle, and I was like, who's that?
Right.
But then I thought it was Gabby Hoffman. Yeah. Right. And I was like, Gabby Hoffman? She was in tons of stuff. She was like a child's tween star before...
In the early 90s.
Before only Disney made tween stars.
Uh-huh. Also from Field of Dreams. I forget what else we found on IMDb, but...
Now and Then.
Now and Then. There you go. But it was good to see her on the screen. She's a pretty hilarious.
Uncle Buck.
Still as an adult. Uncle Buck, that's right.
Yeah, Uncle Buck.
And she did a really good job at carrying these soliloquies while Louis just kind of was slack-jawed and eating ice cream.
He also got a motorcycle.
Yes. Yep.
in that episode.
Also, another one of our friends in New York recently purchased a motorcycle and got injured on it.
Yeah, so don't buy motorcycles, people.
It was a interesting parallel there.
Don't buy motorcycles, people.
But the second episode of Louis was 10 times better and 10 times just more vivid and memorable because it featured probably Jess Jerksica's...
Oh my god, I almost peed my pants.
...favorite joke of... what is it safe to say at least of the last year?
Yeah, easily. It was like... I laughed so hard I almost peed myself when I saw it, and then multiple times the same evening when we were no longer even watching television, I thought about the joke and then like laughed out loud, and you looked at me like, what are you laughing at? And all I said was gorilla joke.
Right,
and
right.
It made total sense.
I don't even think it's like proper to try to replicate
the joke. No, you can't. You just
podcast.
Have to see season two. It's a joke that his daughter tells. But
episode two of season three.
Episode two. What did I say?
Season two.
Oh, yeah. Episode two of season three. Mm-hmm. It's a joke his daughter tells, but it's his... description of the joke that his daughter tells.
Right.
That's like,
and you end up getting
unbelievable.
You end up
hilarious.
Getting to see the joke
right,
executed.
Right, right, right. But it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of Alan Sepinwall called it the Louis C.K.'s rendition of Kids Say the Darndest Things, which I think is pretty good because I mean it on the essential like basic level. That's what Louis C.K. is good at is like these really obvious everyday things and twisting them until they're totally abstract and weird.
Absurd. Yeah. Yeah. Comic. Yeah.
And his retelling of his daughter's joke is...
amazing.
Quite brilliant. There's also an equally... Maybe not equally memorable, but equally as vivid was the second story in that episode featuring Oscar winner Melissa Leo. And a lot of people tried to use like, oh, this Oscar winner had this crazy obscenity-laden speech in a Louis episode. And like... that doesn't really make much sense to me because it's freaking Melissa Leo. When she won an Oscar, she swore on stage. So it's not really, I think, that much of a surprise. But it is fun still because she's a great actress, kind of delivering this very wacky but also kind of interesting and insightful speech about about oral sex, of all things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a rape scene.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... I mean, with Louis C.K., I think the nice thing about his stuff is that he tries to be insightful without having a message. And I appreciated that it was weird and discomforting, like he's very good at in past unpredictable episodes of his show, but doesn't necessarily mean anything. And I look interested to see if Melissa Leo returns in further episodes of the season. So, in sum... watch Louis. It's probably the best show on the summer.
It's a low bar, but...
it is a low bar. Yeah. There's not many shows airing, and of the shows that are airing, most of them are bad.
Yeah. Louis kind of blows it out of the park.
I'll share that my guilty pleasure on the drama end of things... actually, I have a few guilty pleasures, but probably the one that I actually, like...
we'll
I think
admit to
legitimately
the listening
well-made
okay.
is TNT's Falling Skies. Which I probably will write
aliens and
a
stuff.
Totally unnecessary long blog post about when the season ends. But season two of Falling Skies is even better than
have you been watching it?
One.
I saw the first episode with you. And
yep.
Then when have you been watching it? While I'm sleeping?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty
<That's>
much.
Disturbing because I barely sleep.
Yeah. Noah Wiley of ER
yes.
stars as the head of the 2nd Mass Infantry. Or not the head. Whatever. He's one of the main guys. And he does a excellent job at hamming up the screen as a former history professor in the midst of an alien apocalypse. It sounds so silly, but it's fun because
it is silly. It doesn't
like,
just sound silly. I watched it and it is silly.
It's like Walking Dead meets Independence Day, which two things I enjoy watching for completely different reasons, mashed up together.
Noah Wiley might be one of the original actors to perfect the deer in a headlights look, too.
I think you're right, totally. So, yeah, every episode of ER where, you know, that guy from Parker Lewis Can't Lose rushes in somebody on a stretcher. He's the one that they go to for the
right.
For the
he's
big
really
eyes.
Birthed a generation of actors that have perfected that. So
yeah.
It's nice to have him back on television. I
exactly.
Think. Yeah.
The other thing I really like about Falling Skies is that it features teenage boys that aren't horribly obnoxious. We've seen this in...
they're pretty obnoxious.
No, okay. That's your opinion. Your opinions are valid.
Oh, my God.
But, no, literally, like, I mean, teenage actors are teenage actors, but...
I don't think any of them are actually teenagers, are they?
Oh, that's a good question.
They look like 25 at least.
No, the middle one is definitely a teenager, and the younger one, let's not talk about him because he's not really a character. But the two older brothers, the sons of Noah Wiley on the show, I think have legitimate chops, even if they have very kind of sentimental material to work with. Ben, the middle brother, who I think is the best, has an interesting plot that's going that they're playing with as much as they're playing with Noah Wiley's character in that, for a show that is very mawkish and very kind of Spielbergian, they have some cool plot twists going on that make me want to keep watching in a way that is, in a way that reminds me of some of the best. What are you laughing at?
It's just that you said that like you were Swedish or something. Spielbergian.
Spielbergian.
I apologize to our Swedish listeners.
Yep. They number in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Watch Falling Skies on TNT if you like a fun time and are obsessed with alien stuff like me. Anyways, what else are we watching right now? We should also mention that, like Qualler and Bridget mentioned in the last episode, we are all also watching Bunheads in the newsroom.
Oh, yeah.
Bunheads, which is pretty good.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's watchable.
I'm not happy they killed off Cameron, though.
Yeah, Alan Ruck.
Yeah.
First episode.
I don't know.
But, you know, ABC Family, they want to show the mother-daughter-in-law relationship highlight that. So we'll see. But, I mean, Amy Sherman-Palladino is probably the best writer that ABC Family has ever hired. this side of that show Huge that failed and aired a couple of seasons ago from My So-Called Life producers.
Well, if you recall, I think I predicted that Lifetime would be the next channel to have an Emmy-winning show. Right?
Did you? We would.
Yeah, because I said if Stars can do it, then because Lifetime's
Boss,
probably next.
Because Kelsey Grammer won for
yeah.
Boss.
So, but
Stars.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe it'll be ABC Family. Maybe they're next in line for that Emmy.
We shall see.
Sutton Foster can work towards that EGOT.
I don't want to bore too many people with the newsroom. Because
newsroom bores people on its own. Like you don't need it. Doesn't need your help.
It's pretty awful, which is just I think mind-boggling for most people, because I think most people would agree that Aaron Sorkin can be a good writer, and not even just can be a good writer, but has written some of the most memorable shows and even a couple movie scripts of the past 20 years, and yet here he is being blatantly self-righteous and just outwardly wanting to replicate the success of The West Wing and Sports Night all over again.
Yeah, like he wants to do Sports Night again,
right?
Successfully. I have to say, you know, when I was in high school, I had a friend who worked like a low-wage restaurant job, and one day he looked at the log that the manager wrote in after every shift, and the manager had written, "I would rather hit myself in the head repeatedly with a ball peen hammer than work with my friend on another shift." And I kind of feel like that's how all of Sorkin's viewership feels about Newsroom.
Yep, pretty much.
I would rather hit myself in the head repeatedly with a ball peen hammer than watch another episode.
I think another choice quote from you while we watched the third episode was, "This is more boring than eating at Applebee's."
Yes.
So there goes our Applebee sponsorship, but...
Sorry. Sorry, fancy gangsters, and all those Oriental chicken salad dollars that were coming your way.
Not a bad salad.
That's why it's still more exciting than the newsroom.
Exactly. I think the most hilarious thing about this most recent episode, we don't want to tread too much on Qualler and Bridget's territory from a couple weeks ago, but the newest episode decided to not only... leap forward in its time frame. That's they've been doing the 2 years ago events style, but they've just jumped all the way to election night, as if nothing between May and October of 2010 was of note or could have made a good episode.
I guess I appreciate that they did that rather than like a 5 minute like montage, like over the next 6 months.
Right, but it's just weird because I feel like if they keep jumping when they need to. Or when they want to, based on what's in the news, all of a sudden they're going to be caught up to present day. Are they not?
Well, maybe that's their goal, is to just be like 2 weeks behind current events so that they can, you know, comment on.
Yeah, so they... But even then, it's going to be a struggle to not seem completely... I don't know, it just seems completely redundant because all this stuff has been commented on when it actually happened, and rather than have a mirror parallel world like he did in Sports Night or The West Wing, he's instead trying to just dwell on the past.
I said it looks like a parody show. Like it'd be something on 30 Rock. It'd be like the Sorkin show that like Jenna was cast in, and she's excited to be like a legitimate actress. Mm-hmm. And then they'd show like joke episodes of this fake show called The Newsroom.
Right. I would love to see that. Even Sorkin even guest starred in an episode of 30 Rock, poking fun of it himself.
That's right. That's right.
Why not just have reality fold in on itself and get Studio 60 in there while they're at it?
But Matthew Perry has a new show in the fall, so he might not want to retread that territory. But I did say about the show about Newsroom, I hate everything about it. And then I thought about it and I said, actually, that's not true. I'm indifferent to the font of the credits.
Yeah.
I hate everything else.
It's a pretty all right font. You might not be able to hear this, but maybe you can. Our baby is crying in the background, probably because we've been talking about the Newsroom too much.
He hates it too.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll play How About the Newsroom intro credits, very saccharine theme.
Don't do that to our listeners.
Well, you wait, and we'll come back in a few seconds to talk about some older, better shows from our time spent watching HBO Go. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here on
The Blogulator Radio.
And we're back on Blogulator Radio. Baby's sleeping. Took a trip to Target. And that's our cat now making noise because the baby's not here to make noise. Jerkska, we've been watching a lot of old television as well.
We have.
And especially since it's summer, we like to, here on Blogulator Radio, make sure to encourage people to catch up on the stuff that's worthwhile. And we actually have
the classics.
Yeah. We actually have there's a longer discussion to be had in a little bit about a show that maybe we wouldn't really recommend finishing up, but one that I highly recommend everybody go see if they haven't seen any of it, and watch all three seasons if possible, The Life and Times of Tim.
Yes.
This is a show from HBO, animated series that really didn't catch on very much, and it's because it probably has a even more awkward sense of humor than most awkward comedies on the air.
Didn't it get canceled after each season?
It at least got threatened to be canceled. I don't know the specifics, but yeah, the creators kept somehow getting HBO to bring it back. And one of the reasons I know was because HBO kept saying, okay, you can come back as long as you have this shitty time slot. So that's how it survived three seasons, but I'm glad it did because I don't think there was ever an episode that failed to make me have at least one good hard laugh.
I know, you laugh out loud at every episode, and there's guest stars in every episode too, and it's kind of fun to, if you miss it in the credits, figure out who the guest star is.
Right, because it's never like a huge character either.
Right, and the animation never looks like...
Right,
who that actor or actress is.
So it's definitely a fun time, especially because in the third season, you actually see the repercussions of season two, which is that Tim got fired, and then you know the boss is a main character, so somehow
that has to continue.
Omnicorp continues to be a character.
Right.
If you're not familiar, should probably just recap real quick. It's a story of a guy named Tim, and he works for a generic conglomerate named Omnicorp.
His girlfriend named Amy.
Yep.
He's friends with a hooker.
Yep.
His two best friends are Stewballs.
Stewballs and Rodney. And kind of follows their misadventures. That's the basic plot of it, but...
It's lighthearted, and there's two stories per episode. Like separate stories per episode.
Right, a la Louie, which we mentioned earlier.
Is that usually how Louie works?
Yeah, I think there's only like two or three episodes that are just one long story.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't even paid attention to that, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, so if you only have 15 minutes to spare.
Right, or like an Adult Swim show.
Right. It's good times.
It's definitely good times. And
In life.
I think even though it's a bare bones idea for a show. I mean, obviously the comedy stylings often overtake the plot of any given sitcom or even animated series, but I think it's actually pretty brilliant because it has a very a plot that could be generic, you know, guy working for a faceless corporation.
It could be Dilbert.
Yeah, it could be Dilbert, could be Office Space. But the nice thing about it is that each season kind of has its own identity, and which makes sense since it's on HBO. But it's nice how the first season is all about, you know, Tim working at this place, and it's mostly just introducing you to the characters in the world of Life and Times of Tim. And the second season is, you know, Kim getting in trouble and eventually getting fired. And the third season is, you know, him dealing with being unemployed, which doesn't seem like too heavy of a social commentary or anything like that. But
it's not
meant to be, but it definitely makes you really, it's a really like immersive world that I think they bring you into. And that's where a lot of the comedy comes from.
It is.
Especially you mentioned the girlfriend, Amy, who somehow is the, you know, the girl that still keeps dating Tim even though he keeps screwing up over and over again.
The hijinks are always really creative too. Like,
yes.
It's very Curb Your Enthusiasm-esque in terms of like the pickles that they get themselves into.
Yeah, I mean,
like it all makes sense across, like as you're watching it unfold, it makes sense that these things are happening. But then when you see like the climactic scene at the end, where you see where all these like missteps have led them,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just absurd.
And unlike your usual like Seinfeldian show, you get to have the main character go to absurd lengths because it's animated, and
right.
They can basically do whatever they want climax. You know, whether it's Tim starring in a made-for-TV movie about how this one time he talks about how he saved somebody's life, and then hijinks ensue with the dog and the water tank and what have you, and where that would be like a huge high-budget concept for an HBO comedy, they're able to get away with it because of the animated.
If they want to bring a donkey.
Yeah. There's so great.
Show their authority, they can do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they do.
So
watch it.
Definitely.
Life and Times of Tim.
All three seasons are available on HBO Go. Speaking of old TV, we should probably make a pitch real quick for our sponsor,
yes.
Who is not HBO Go, even though we've mentioned them for free thousands of times now. Netflix is number one way to get your old TV fix as well. Go to bit.ly/blogflix, that's spelled bit.ly/blogflix. Or just click on the link on the screen here at the Blogulator Radio page, and it'll take you to a place where you get a free 2-week trial courtesy of the Blogulator and Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Cheaper than HBO.
Definitely cheaper than HBO. However, that's not what we're here to talk about. You can watch Terriers on there, you can watch Friday Night Lights, you can watch all sorts of things, but you cannot watch Big Love.
Mm-hmm.
A show that Jerkska, Qualler, Bridget, and so many more Blogulator friends and family have previously been obsessed with. I would even go so far as, still in my memory, I feel like season 3 was a really awesome season of television.
We waited with bated breath each week for the new episode. We watched it.
Yes.
Not in live time, but on the night it aired.
Right.
Right?
Right.
We all gathered around the ye old DVR.
Because we had Big Love Sundays.
Right.
And sometimes it would take a while to gather people together and make our Sundays. Literally, this is what we did.
Right.
Make Sundays. Sometimes it would be Big Love Soup Days.
We have friends, really. It's not just Chris and me with, like, a soup ladle.
No, it's not, I swear.
Most of the time.
But it was a wonderful couple of years.
It was.
We did it with season 4 as well, but that's when the show kind of went off the rails.
I wouldn't say it jumped the shark.
No, it just lost its
momentum.
Yeah. It lost its focus. It's too bad because, once again, talking about immersive worlds, I mean, the idea of having a family drama with social commentary based around a polygamist family in Salt Lake City, it seems like that's pretty ripe for interesting conceits and plot twists and what have you.
And it was.
I would say the first season is good. I'd say the second season was really good. I'd say the third season was just really awesome at taking the consequences from this guy Bill Hendrickson and his three wives another level. Hendrickson. I always confuse it because Lance Hendrickson is an awesome actor.
Ah.
Right. But Hendrickson.
Hendrickson. Well, and I think it took till season 3 for them to really hit their stride because there are so many characters in this immersive world, and you have to know the backstory of everyone before you can truly understand the
right.
You know what's going on.
And they also
characters.
Right, and it also took season till season 3 to really have the consequences of the big bads of the show, the villains, mm-hmm. of Roman, who is the leader of the compound, as well as the father of one of Bill's wives. And also that year was Selma and I forget the guy, Green, something Green.
Yeah, the Green family. Yeah.
The Green family. And so having those two, that was something that Big Love was good at, it used to be. They'd have two kind of competing antagonistic storylines that would end up folding in on each other because the world of polygamy and Mormonism in Salt Lake City is so interconnected, or anyways, that's how it's portrayed on the show. That it ended up really making for some exciting, like, suspense television, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, also a more introspective character-based drama.
You had the Henriksons, who don't fit in within, you know, they don't fit in within the LDS church.
Right.
Right, as polygamists. They don't fit in with the compound leaders or the other polygamist leaders, who are kind of backwards and, you know, abusive and whatnot. And they don't really fit in their community either. But then you also had the interpersonal relationships within the Henriksen family themselves. And, his first wife, they had teenagers that were grappling with this idea of polygamy in their family, mm-hmm. and what they believed in and whether they believed in the principle and how to escape. And you had new children coming into the family. You had the relationships between the wives that were all kind of playing out over these seasons.
Right.
But by the time they get to, like, the fifth season that we just finished watching, it's just kind of like they're spinning their wheels a little bit. Like, they stalled. And where it used to be that they, like you said, had all these storylines that kind of folded in on one another, it seemed like they based season 5 around this idea of, okay, Bill's going to run for Senate. He's going to run for state Senate.
Right.
And that started, that's all they needed.
Yeah. They and started then, in season 4.
Right. Ramping that up. Right. But then season 5 was like, okay, he gets elected. Everyone knows that they're polygamists now.
Right.
And what happens?
It loses the mystique of them trying to hide their identities. That was where a lot of the inner conflict of these characters came from, was, you know, trying to battle the fact that they wanted to live this mm-hmm. lifestyle, but they also knew that there'd be, you know, cavalcade of consequences if they were to out themselves. And I mean, I think it was pretty brave of the show to go to that length, but it ended up just not working out for it.
That's true, because it would have been really easy for them to get through 5 seasons just narrowly escaping,
right?
You know, on their family being unveiled, yeah. or unmasked, and they didn't do that. But I also think having this outsider as a political player, as sort of the central theme of the fifth season.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to be a lot more sophisticated in the way they presented the political plot lines of the show.
Right.
I mean, and they never got really into the behind-the-scenes political negotiations.
Right.
Or, you know, they did on a very surface level. But
mm-hmm. And that's where the... Yeah. I mean, I think the creators of the show, as we found out with, like, season 3, is these guys are two guys that grew up in the Mormon community in Salt Lake City, and so they feel like they've got a really good handle on the perspectives of these people, but they don't know really how to turn it into a political show.
Right.
Like The Wire did, for instance.
Or West Wing.
I mean, it's just, it's not in their strengths, and so it made it feel really lackluster, especially in comparison to the fact that we know these characters so well by season 5 that there's so many other things these people could be doing that would be more...
Right, because engaging. Life is kind of falling down around them, too. Like, It just seems like they're focused on the wrong things. Plus, I thought you were going to say, like, it seems really absurd because it's Bill Paxton.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah. Bill Paxton has probably always been the show's weakest link, unfortunately, because he's the main freaking character.
I didn't really put this together until we were watching the fifth season, but I really think that Bill Henriksen... is a character much like Brandon Walsh.
Yes.
I think we've talked about this in other podcasts, the Brandon mm-hmm. Walsh syndrome.
Yes.
Also suffered by Dawson Leary, suffered by Peter Krause's character in everything.
Every show he's in, yeah.
and where you have this guy who's not really that good of a guy, but is painted throughout the show as, like, right. this hero.
Jeff Daniels in Newsroom being, like, the most blatant example of that
later. Right, and he is selfish and narcissistic and...
self-righteous.
Yeah, incredibly selfish.
Incredibly self-righteous.
But everyone else just fans the flames of their narcissism around him.
And I feel like the show has played over that weakness in ways in the past, and I think they tried to hint at this as season 5 and just failed at it horribly, was that the biggest aspect of Bill's self-righteousness or his, you know, a desire to start a new church and thinking that he's the new prophet of Mormonism without saying the word prophet, is that we also see the perspective of the wives. And I mean, there are a lot of interesting, like, family politics, gender politics with the wives, you know, trying to serve their husband, but at the same time, you know, having conflicted feelings. And there, I think it was pretty interesting that they wanted to have this storyline with Barb feeling like she could be a priest, like she had a blessing or a calling to mm-hmm. become a priest. But A, they didn't follow through with it when she's almost baptized in this Reformed church in which women can be priests. She at the last minute says, no, I want to serve my husband instead. And I thought that was pretty weak way
to serve her family, right?
Right. To keep her in the fold.
Well, and I had asked you, did they know that this was their last season?
They did.
Mm-hmm. And you said yes. And I was confused by that because it seems like in the 5th season they threw out all these really complicated plot points in like the last few episodes. So there was no way they could cleanly, like, have a clean series finale.
Right.
Right? It seemed like they rushed everything.
And was the big problem with the 4th season, too. And that was more based on the fact that they had too much antagonism, way overly absurd plot lines. J.J., Nicolette's ex-husband, comes in and turns out that
all coming back to me now.
That he's secretly impregnating as many people as he can in his clinic. To spread his seed or whatever, and then there's this big crazy fire that ends up burning him alive, and all this crazy stuff happens in season 4 that made it feel like they were spinning their wheels on a like chaotic
and it didn't yeah
pace.
It just didn't get any better.
And then this season they did the same thing, except instead of making it absurd, they just had so many, like you said, they started so many plot threads that they didn't think that they almost wished right. that seemed like they wanted more episodes to finish up with.
Right. And I said, across the most impressive thing is that we didn't read or hear a spoiler yes. for how the series ends. Right. And I don't know if we want to
sure.
have a spoiler here on the podcast.
Big spoiler. Stop listening or forward to the
end.
If
you're going to watch season 5 of Big Love, you need to stop this
right.
podcast. But they... Well, you can say it.
Okay. Well, freaking main character gets shot and dies in the last, like, 3 minutes of the show.
But not by anyone...
It's totally out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's like his neighbor who has like a failing marriage and is mad that he resatted his lawn for him.
Literally, that's what happens.
Like it's not anyone from the compound or the other polygamous groups or a crazy protester or the LDS church or.
And you know what? On like the show, like The Wire. Well, I keep coming back to The Wire, but I feel like there's so many connections of how that show did things that Big Love wanted to do better. I know the idea of like taking a really important character and just having them die for a completely random reason. Omar, that happened to him in the final season, you know, random little kid trying to rob a store kills Omar. Spoiler alert. But that showed kind of the randomness, the chaos of Baltimore. But you don't get that sense with Big Love. Big Love is a show where it's all about, you know, big crowning crescendos and the grandiosity of, you know, Bill's church that he's trying to create.
Right.
There's this moment where he literally sees Emma Smith, Joseph Smith's wife, in the back of the church when he's somehow amassed this huge following at the series finale.
Well, and he dies when he's most at peace. It's like, that's what I'm saying, is they tried to, like, neatly, this is the only way they could think of to, like, neatly wrap up all the plot lines, is, like, he develops this sense of, like, peace that he's okay with losing his seat in the Senate. He's okay with losing Home Plus, is because he knows he made this one true church and he sees Emma Smith, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then his wives, like, are kind of reconciling with one another.
Right.
And then he dies and it, like, unites the family and they all get to do exactly what they wanted to do.
Right.
And it just...
I feel like it would have been...
It was just such a, like... It was easy.
Right, it was easy.
It was easy and it was phoned in and it... hurt a little bit.
Right. I think I said when it happened, I was like, just because you're an HBO, I was thinking specifically of Six Feet Under, just because you're
or Sopranos.
Or Sopranos, just because you're an HBO show doesn't mean you have to have your protagonist die in the end.
Right.
And it definitely didn't make sense. I thought, like, if marriage was, like, the key question or issue talked about through all five seasons of Big Love, I was waiting for finally one of the wives to leave him, or maybe two of the three to leave him, or some kind of...
happened to a side character, Don, in one of the earlier seasons. Yeah.
That would be a much better dissolution rather than having this resolution that's, like, trying to be feigned by this tragic ending of losing the hero of the show, who was completely unlikable throughout most of the series.
Right.
So it was very frustrating to sit through. I think we had seven episodes or so left of the show, and we decided to give it a shot since there was nothing else to watch.
Right.
I feel like in so many ways I can be a nerdy completist. And
well, I got pissed a little. Yes, I felt betrayed.
I did,
like,
too.
On a scale of, like, The Wire to The Killing, it was, like, very close to how I felt about The Killing pulling the rug out from under all of us.
With, I think, the big exception being that...
I invested, like, more time.
Yeah, you invested more time. However, I mean, I think one of the things I realized with, even as I was disappointed by the finale, the thing that got me through these seven episodes was I still really liked all three actresses that played the wives.
Did any of them ever win Emmys?
No, that show? I don't think this show won any Emmys.
I'm going to call bullshit on that. Like, they really... I think any of the three
women in
a given episode were deserving of at least an Emmy nod.
Right. I think that some of them were nominated.
Or nodded at. Or nodded.
We're giving that nod.
I tip my hat to you.
But seriously, I know you have a thing for Chloe Sevigny.
Well, yeah, she's a fox.
Which is weird because she's made up to be, you know, the plain clothes wife and the mean one.
Well, I kind of like Mean Girls.
Yeah. But yeah, she's particularly phenomenal, I think, of the three, because she has such an interesting character in that she can be very mean, and I actually did like the scene where she kind of admits it and realizes that she kind of breaks down and confesses to how unfair she's treated her daughter Carolyn.
She is the anti-hero that they
want for the show. Yeah. And, like, I end up liking her way more than I like Bill.
Because they present her as fallible, and they're like...
Right.
She's constantly dealing with her own demons.
Exactly. And it makes sense that she has these demons because her background, like I said, she's the plainclothes wife because she comes from the compound.
She's the daughter of the prophet on the compound.
Right. That's going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
talk about her. I just want to mention her brother real quick since he was another main character of season five. Albie. Also used to be a really interesting character, and they just kind of sidelined him as the villain of of season five.
Well, and at what point, because one of the reasons it was so, he was such an interesting character is that he was a closeted homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like all of a sudden this season, everybody knew he was gay. And they kept, like, threatening to out him, but I don't know who they're going to out him to. Because people on the compound knew.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like everybody knew, and then yet they continued to threatened out him, like his mother, his sister.
Well,
Bill.
That's another thing talking about, like, starting so many plot threads.
Yeah.
One thing that the show tends to do is bring in plot threads in the middle of episodes where it involves, like, a brand new character, but they talk about this character as if they've always been on the show, like the nephew that Bill all of a sudden decides to threaten Albie with, like, I know what you've done to Madison. And we're like, who the fuck is Madison? It's just, like, apparently some kid that Albie's been abusing in the past.
Right.
But it makes it very convenient. Deus Ex Machina for the show.
And I also think they've always struggled with that a little bit in that, at least some of the earlier seasons, for a while there were so many characters going on that it was difficult to follow.
And it was
because Bill's brother, and then Bill's brother's first wife, and then it just got really complicated.
It's a very sprawling kind of show, which makes sense because of the nature of the plot. But I even think when they did that, like Bill's brother, when they had a new character to kind of jut out from the main family and introduce, they made sure to give him the proper due and like, I liked Belle's brother as a character. He was interesting.
And Wanda. And,
yeah. You know. They stayed with those people, like, these characters that they wanted to introduce. They introduced them, stayed with them, and gave them a farewell.
Yeah.
But now with season 5, and also with season 4, they're just, like, coming at you every episode.
Well, and the finale of one thing we didn't talk about is that, yes, it's they kill him off at the end, like, this deus ex machina, you know, yeah. thing. But then... that's not the last scene.
No.
Like, you get this beautiful shot of, like, the clouds and the sun shining through the clouds, and we're like, oh, man, this is how they're going to end it. That's so cheap and easy, and you expect to see the credits.
Yeah.
But you don't.
Nope.
They make it worse by saying 11 months later, uh-huh. and then neatly tying up every other loose thread they have.
Including bringing Sarah back to the show, played by Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, they're
now a big movie star. And
yeah.
and as well as Aaron Paul, now big TV star on Breaking Bad.
Right, and you had two relationships that were really tenuous when Bill dies, right? So
yeah.
you had Carolyn's relationship with her mother, Nikki,
mm-hmm.
and you have the romantic relationship between Heather and Ben.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of those are just, like, neatly sewn up because in the 11 months later scene, they're, like, all together and happy.
Right. It's so weird to think that, like, the patriarch's death will cause everybody to come back together. Like,
yeah.
I feel like if that happened, I could have almost given the show more mercy if they added that coda scene and it showed them in shambles and it showed, you know, no, the house is deserted or something like that. And, I don't know, been doing coke or nothing that extreme. But something to show that, you know, this...
For Mormons, that might be, like, doing Coca-Cola, though.
That would. You're right. Something to show that...
drinking that caffeine.
They're not just trying to find something to tie the show up with a ribbon.
Yeah, yeah.
Depressing.
Very. Very much so.
But just to touch on real quick the other two wives, since we mentioned Nikki, played by Chloe Sevigny.
Oh, yes.
Another thing that aggravated me. We mentioned Jean Triplehorn, Barb going through her plot line, which could have been interesting,
from,
but
what is she from too? Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, isn't she she's the wife that gets cheated on, right? In Fatal Attraction.
Something. Yeah.
Or she's also she. In, I don't know. I can't keep track. Body Heat.
Something.
One of those. But yeah, she's been around for a while. She's part of a hilarious joke in Date Night, which I enjoyed. But the third wife, played by Jennifer Goodwin, Margene. you wanted to mention the fact that we used to be so into this show that Qualler read Margene's fake blog.
I don't know if you should out him to your listeners.
I don't know. He can out me about other embarrassing
things.
Yeah, HBO
had a fake Margene blog.
Yeah.
In which she was writing before she was part of the Hendrickson baby.
Yeah, exactly.
As she's falling in love with Bill as their babysitter. And
things get
creepy.
Some HBO greenlit fanfic.
Are gonna get messy.
But her main plot lines of this season were also disappointing. One which was kind of manufactured, but at least dramatically interesting. We find out that she lied about her age when she married Bill, and so Bill ends up getting arrested for statutory rape because she was turns out she was 16 when she married him. But that just comes out of the blue, and as you mentioned, it'd be interesting to go back to that fake blog to see if Margene talks about that at all, or if it,
I'm sure not. I mean,
yeah.
This was not a well-planned season.
No. But the other of which I think was even more aggravating was this stupid plotline with her and Goji Blast selling energy drinks through a pyramid scheme.
Did
you?
That.
What did you like about it?
One, it added a little bit of comic relief to a season that had forgotten that comedy used to be part of it.
That's true.
So I appreciated that.
What comedy was involved with it, really, though?
The outfits that she wore.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah.
And everyone's comments about the outfits that she wore.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they kept saying, like, juice a lot.
Really?
I don't know.
It's not about the damn juice.
There were a lot of blank stares associated with Goji, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But Margene has always been at her best when she has an outside, like, sales job, right? But, when they're putting together the casino, mm-hmm. she's the wife that is the best representative of them when they're trying to negotiate with tribal leaders, right?
Mm-hmm.
She had her hearts on a sleeve product that she was selling on, you know, QVC or whatever.
Right.
And I think that when she had the plotline in which she's doing sales and involved in that, the best parts of her character are emphasized in the family relationships
mm-hmm.
that are happening.
And it does, I mean, it does show kind of like, well, that's, I think, why I kind of wished to see some, one of the wives get out of the marriage, is because it showed, you know, that she could have a successful life on her own, but she kept getting stubbed out. But I think it was, I mean, it was annoyingly, annoyingly a mirror of, the commentary about polygamy, because they had, there's even literally a scene where the CEO tells Margene he thinks she's in a cult, which is polygamy, and then
her family tells her that she's in a cult in Goji,
right, doing the pyramid scheme. And it's just, it was overdone, and I didn't think they really did anything interesting with it, except for that it was tangentially related to ruining the marriage between Pam and her husband, who ends up killing Bill.
Right. But if you're going to point out everything in this season that really okay, didn't go anywhere, I mean, yeah, why focus on Goji?
True, true. But they just, it was just annoying. So that's my summed up review. It's just annoying.
Yeah.
Because it used to be a really good show.
But for those of you who were obsessed with it like we were,
which I don't know how many of those exist.
Yeah, but if you're out there, hear me out. If you're out there, I feel good that we watched the last season.
Oh, that always feels good to be a completist. I think that's just being nerds, though.
Yeah, but I don't feel that way. Like, I gave up on the killing, and I don't regret that.
No, of course.
There's not even a little part of me that thinks that I should have watched that second season.
No.
But there is a few, I think, a little bit.
I think that if we didn't have HBO Go, I would be watching that on demand. Yes. Alas, big love. Not so much recommendation, but definitely check out Lifetimes of Tim. Check out Louie, the new season airing right now on FX every Thursday. Check out Bunheads too. It's an entertaining show. Let's wrap it up here by reminding you that you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and online at theblogulator.com. Check us back next week for a season premiere episode about Breaking Bad. Ooh. Per usual, our opinions are valid.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you,